Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Coming up on the Mike Wise Show, we've got a guest who's not only a big performer on the court, but a guy who has taken his knowledge and his social conscience off of it to do great things. I can't wait to speak to him. He's got a heck of a history. And, well, you know what to do. Darlene, do your thing.
The Mike Wise Show is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Mike Wise Show is hosted by a guy who played basketball atrociously for Hawaii Pacific College, which forced him into journalism. And, oh yeah, he wrote about basketball for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and ESPN. He's also a wise ass, and so are many of his guests. Right, Mike?
That's right, Darlene. As always, thank you. My guest this week, apropos for many reasons, the fact that the NBA may be playing again very soon, but also someone who is second time on the program, friend of mine, more than even someone I covered, Garrett Temple. Welcome back to the program, sir.
I appreciate you having me, Mike. Glad to be back.
I know you're tired of this crazy pandemic life and everything has happened. Are you genuinely excited about playing basketball? And secondly, do you think it will in fact happen at the end of July?
I'm tired of the pandemic. I'm especially tired of the other pandemic that's going on. It's been going on for so many years in this country, yeah. The racial pandemic. But I am excited to play basketball. I am, you know, it is my workout today. It's a way to a way out for us. It's a way just to get away from things, and it just so happens to also be our job. So this is something, a game I love to do. I'm very excited to actually get back to hooping.
Let's go straight to the issues of the day, because I think you hit it on the head. Everybody in this country, whether you're black, you're white, they have been taken, moved, upset, whatever, by the protest after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. For some reason, this was a flashpoint when all these other killings weren't. On one hand, it's very, what do I want to call, uplifting for someone like me who believes in Black Lives Mattering for much longer than just a few weeks ago. But on the other hand, it's like, just now we're talking about this? Where do you stand on it, sir?
I appreciate that, Mike. And knowing you for a number of years, I assume that, and I appreciate you stating that. I agree with you in a lot of respects. The fact that, like, why did it have to take this specific one? But at the same time, we are at this point now. I do believe that things are a little different than other times. And because of that, we have to use the amount of attention that's on it to try to really create the change that's needed. And but I do have those thoughts of, why did it take this long? But at the same time, like I said, we're here, and we need to worry about what's going on at hand.
I feel like, Tim, this is white America's wake-up call, and we just better not hit snooze. I asked Monica McNutt, who hosts her own show here, Buckets, Boards, and Blocks, a strong Black woman, very thoughtful and emotional about this issue. I said, what can we do? I want to ask you, what, like, other than be, allies on social media, other than call out racism among our friends when it's just a white person to white person talk, what else can we do to, I don't know, be soldiers for equality in this country, so to speak.
Agree. I appreciate you asking. Most white people do not ask because they're afraid to offend their black friends, their black colleagues. But I urge people listening to this, if you're white and you have black people that you're associated with, ask questions. When situations like this happen, ask questions, because that way they know you care and they know that you want to find solutions. So to answer your question, I would say that first and foremost, white America needs to educate themselves on the black plight in America, and what we've been, what our community has had to face since we've been brought over here, or since, you know, the people that were there were black people already here. And what has happened for the last 400 years in terms of the marginalization of the black community. So the way to educate is to read. But another way to educate, which is probably a little quicker and a little more in tune to society today, is to watch movies. So if a couple of my friends and I put together something called The Great Challenge. It has its own Instagram page. We have a website. It's it's 12 to 15 movies, about 5 to 6 books that you can read that will really give you a glimpse into the life, the black struggle in America. And I think once people start reading and start watching and start understanding it, then hearts will change. I agree that saying you're not a racist isn't enough. Posting a message on Instagram isn't enough. You have to actually be anti-racist. You have to call out colleagues, call out people. But also, I think, you know, people that have young children, you have to raise them to be able to use their white privilege. Acknowledge the white privilege that you have and use it for good at the end of the day. I'm a person, I acknowledge that I have male privilege. That's just the world we live in. But I try to use that male privilege for positive change.
That's beautiful. So,
exactly. At the end of the day, you have to use the white privilege that is afforded to you for positive change.
I think that is so thoughtful, because I tell you what, Greg Popovich had a comment about, you don't even know that we have white privilege. You know, and part of me took it when I first heard it. I was so tired of hearing, white guilt, white privilege. Like, I had a really, I have my own tough background. Why do I? And I realized one day it's not about me. It's systemic. I was born into it. And just like you and I could have the same exact outfit on and be on opposite corners in Central Park, and 10 cab drivers will pass you by but pick me up, or you'll never know why you didn't get a home loan, and I'll never have that question in my head. There's just little things for granted, and I realize now that, I think white people, I think, people that look like me, we all need to get our head around the fact that we have white. I don't think a lot of people realize we even have it, or they take it personal as if your life is easier. Like, no, there's white people I know who had harder lives than some black people, but it doesn't mean that you don't have privileges that they never will even know about because of because of how you look like. And so I completely agree with that. And the male privilege thing, I try to use it for, in the newsrooms I've worked in, like, look, we don't have any women sports writers. We don't have enough women editors. Like, man, there's a lot of women playing sports. What are we doing? And so I think you're right. Everybody knows my fond affection for you. If you've never heard Garrett Temple before on this program, you got to go back and listen, because he is here for many reasons. But one of them is his family has been so involved in the struggle from back in the day. I mean, his grandfather, the Louisiana, LSU, he tried to go there for college. They were, because of their failure to integrate at that time, he got the state of Louisiana to pay for his MBA at Michigan State. His own father, Collis, the first man ever to be recruited and play for LSU as an African-American, this man debated David Duke on the campus of LSU. I mean, you forget about basketball. You've been in the struggle forever, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up hearing stories, hearing a lot of stories. And, you know, like I said, the fact that my grandfather was able to put his pride aside 16 years after they denied him admission, to understand, you know what, I'm going to go get my degree. I'm going to get educated. And I'm still going to push my son to go to a school because I believe that this is going to be best for our community at large in the long run. So, and then obviously my father, what he had to go through, the stories I've heard, the way that he's had to handle different things, still in Baton Rouge. The rest of my family, everybody's still in Baton Rouge. Businessmen doing different things. I was definitely raised to impact social change, and I try to do it the best way I can.
Yeah, from Sacramento and everything you've done in your career, I look at it and I applaud for a lot of the off the court things as well. When you said earlier that, you know, we need to, I love that website. I love the Instagram website again. Movies. I always tell friends, now tell me if you got, do you have 12 movies on there, you said?
I think it's 12 or 13 movies. There's a couple of movies that aren't on there that we need to add. But yeah, like Fruitvale
Station. I'm going to give you two right now. I'm just going to guess. All right.
Mm-hmm.
This is your white friend guessing at what I should be educated by. Malcolm X.
Malcolm X is not on there.
Oh, Denzel should have got an Academy Award for that.
No question. Agreed wholeheartedly.
Do the Right Thing.
Do the Right Thing is not on there. That's definitely one that we got to put on there.
Glory Road.
Glory Road is. I feel like Glory Road is on there.
Okay, give me a couple. I want to hear a couple. I want to see because I'm all into it now. I feel like I almost should publicize it for you and start watching.
So you definitely should. You definitely should. Again, and the biggest thing about this is the great challenge. It's not just for somebody to go and watch. Okay, we want you to challenge other people to watch this. Challenge other non-Black Americans to watch this and educate themselves. So the documentary 13th, which talks about the 13th Amendment, and basically it's on Netflix, how how slavery changed and just basically woven its way and went from slavery, transitioned to prison leasing. And just the fabric of the prison industrial complex. And that, it's very, very powerful. It's on Netflix. I feel like it won a couple of Emmys. Another one, When They See Us, about the five Black
Central boys. Park Five.
Central Park Five, the five Black boys who were coerced into saying things that they, again, and I hate, I'm saying the word boys because these were 14, 15, 16-year-old young men, kids. When They See Us, very strong, also on Netflix. Another one, Time, a Khalif Browder story. The story about Khalif Browder, 16-year-old kid, was arrested for allegedly stealing a backpack and was sent to Rikers Island as a 16-year-old for stealing a backpack. And was never, the trial didn't happen for, the trial got thrown out 3 years later. It never went to trial. He needed $900 to get bail. It's just a, he ended up committing suicide, I want to say 2 years after he was let out of jail at age 21, 22. It just shows so many different things.
I've never seen that movie, and I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna try and find a way to watch it today. That's incredible. That's so sad, but so necessary viewing.
Yeah, so many. There's so many. Amistad, Birth of a Nation, Nat Turner story, the story about a slave who set up a slave revolt in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, everything we have up there is a true story. Documentaries, they have something called Emmanuel, which is a documentary produced by Steph Curry that talks about the Charleston shooting. They have something called King in the Wilderness that basically it's a documentary talking about Martin Luther King's last year and a half of his life. These are very powerful things that people, when they
12 years a slave,
12 years a slave.
Yeah, that shook me up. I saw it at the theater.
A true story. Another true story. Hidden Figures. So these are things that, you know, need to be A big one. I almost forgot one of the biggest to me, in my opinion, Just Mercy, a true story that was in, it was in theaters earlier this year.
Just Mercy.
Story about Brian Stevenson, who's a lawyer still today. It's a story about an inmate that was accused of murder when he was 20 miles away from where the murder occurred at a family barbecue all day with his 25, 30 family members, was put on death row 2 years before the trial even happened, was put on death row 2 years before the trial happened, if you can wrap your head around that. And Brian Stevenson, I was able to speak to him for, we did a private screening of the movie for a couple of people in the organization. Kyrie and I helped host it. And I actually, after I saw it, I hosted another screening of it just for some high school students, because I think it's so powerful to watch. So
you must have had a pretty emotional embrace with him, Brian Stevenson, when you saw him.
Yeah, no question. I mean, the things that he's told me about what he's learned in this country. He works in Alabama. He's from born and raised in Delaware. He has something called the Equal Justice Initiative. I think that's what it's called. If I'm mistaken, I apologize. But he works to try to get people that are on death row, that are children, off. And he's argued a few cases in front of the Supreme Court. Children cannot go on death row because of a case that he argued anymore in America. So he's a very, very strong advocate for us.
I think this is great. And my thing is, and it's hard to get through to people sometimes because of where they are. They feel once you say the word racist, it's full on. Oh, my God, I have to counteract that. I'm not that guy. And you don't by absorbing these movies, by absorbing this literature, by educating yourself, you're not playing into like white guilt and my ancestors were bad and all this. No, you're finding out the struggles of people around you that you probably didn't even know about. And what's wrong with that? Like, well, what's wrong with knowing about the people around you that could be your neighbors, your coworkers, everybody, people you worship on the floor that you think that they somehow, because they're NBA millionaires, they couldn't possibly go through all this. Is just, to me, I don't know why you wouldn't want to find out more about people that you live next to and around in this country, irrespective of who they are, where they're from. I mean, I just, that part gets me. Like, we all have to, like, so many of my brethren that look like me have to internalize this as, oh, no, they're coming for us. They want us all. They want our jobs. They want, like, no, they just, it's like somebody being beat up as a bully and going back to the bully as an adult and saying, you know, I could beat your ass in front of your kids right now, but I'm not going to do that. I just want to tell you what you did to me affected me. Please acknowledge what you did to me and we can move on.
Exactly.
You know, and that's that's why I think is as a white person in this country, like just acknowledge where we are and we can all be in a better place. Until we do that, man, we're just, we're all on different teams politically, in some ways racially. That's the thing I want to get away from.
No question. And like you said, that the fact about, well, there are millionaires, you know, I know white people that don't have millions of dollars. White privilege is not having to be in an airport. And when first class is called or comfort plus is called, when I walk up to board the plane, a 55, 60 year old white man taps me on my shoulder and says, they call first class. I know you're not first class. And no 30-year-old white guy has to go through that. That's just not the case. It's not always physical violence by the hands of police or physical violence that happens. These are things that, as a black man, as a black woman in this country, you have to go through daily. One book that I suggest that's on the Great Challenge is called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. And this author writes, she writes a great book about
just post-traumatic. I'm sorry, Temp. What was it called again?
Post-traumatic slave syndrome. She writes a great book about the residual effects of slavery to Black people today. Because a lot of people say that was so long ago, but there still so much remnants of it still to this day. It's the great challenge. I hope your listeners really take heed to that and like I said, share it amongst each other, amongst colleagues, amongst friends. It'll make our world a better place.
I love that. Before I let you go, are the Brooklyn Nets going to advance in the playoffs? That may or may not come. I'm still not sure.
I would say, yeah, man. You know, you never know. We could be
make some noise.
A 7 seed, 8 seed, make some noise. You never know what can happen. But it's a whole different situation. Crappy. It's going to be different for everybody. So yeah, we'll definitely try to make some noise. I know that's for sure.
Yeah, and Adam Silver is the kind of person where he's not going to play if people are dying left and right and there's a tone deafness to it. He'll wait. When the NBA becomes not only a safe place and it mirrors society, but this could be a positive thing and it could take people's minds off the craziness and chaos in this world. I think that's when – and if that happens in July, God bless America. You know, I hope it does.
Yeah, I mean, and one thing I will say, that's what we don't want, you know, the focus to be taken off of what's going on as Black men in America.
Yes.
Because I think the focus is actually helping people change and think about what's going on. So that's not what we want to do. But at the same time, we do want to play basketball and honestly take this platform that we're going to have so many people watching us, not only play basketball, but maybe use this platform to create even more change.
I think that would be great. I think one of the best messages is just listen. I love to hear when people say, oh, you're woke, you're enlightened. It's like sometimes, but other times I'm not. Like Terry Crews, for example, a person who's done a lot for people of color in this country, really came under fire for something he tweeted last week regarding basically in so many words, you know, wrote all lives matter and we need white people to do this. And it really turned a lot of people off. And so I wanted to support him. And I almost threw stuff out there. And somebody, God bless her, I'll name her, Monique Carey, former Duke basketball player, former WNBA player, follows me. She goes, Mike, sit this one out. And she writes me a message in the DM saying, you know, I love you, you know, but like, man, this guy, he's kind of angered a couple Black folks around for certain reasons. And it's, you know, it's not that we hate him. We just want to check him. And so it's right. Like, it was a great moment for me to listen rather than react.
Agreed. Agreed.
All right. Well, I know you got other stuff going on and this has been tremendous. Thank you so much, Garrett Temple. Temp to those who know him well. Look, basketball is just part of his story. I'm going to give your father a call too, to see how he's doing with all this. Cause shoot, he was just the best to me when I did the story for Sports Illustrated on you. So thank you, brother.
For sure. Appreciate it so much, Mike. I'll tell my dad you'd be looking for him.
That was dope.
All right. That was Garrett Temple joining us. Bruce Bernstein, I can't believe that you did not get him for me earlier in the week. Actually, I didn't even think about it. And then you put in my mind, hey, why don't you call up Garrett Temple? Boom, shakalaka. I did it, and we got this great interview.
Garrett was the second guest ever on the Mike Wise Show back on January 21st, 2019. Okay.
And anybody who knows who was the first guest, call in now. Oh, wait, this is taped. It was Jay Crossover, Jamal Crawford. That's right. Garrett was the second guest on the show.
He was the second guest, and I remember when we did that show the first time, some of the ground that we covered today was covered back then. I remember, and if anyone wants to go back and listen, they can find it in the Mike Wise Show folders on Apple or wherever you go back in the archive. He told the story back then about how his father, Collis, and you touched it briefly in this discussion,
sure,
used to debate with the notorious racist David Duke on the LSU campus. Duke would eventually become like the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. And Collis Temple, as an undergrad, wasn't having any of his BS. He let him have it, but good, in front of a lot of people. And I think the whole idea of social justice is just in the Temple family's DNA. You couldn't have found a better guest for this week.
Yeah, I want to give you this lead from the Sports Illustrated article written by one Mike Wise. Have you ever heard of him? It goes, in the fall of 1971, on the sidewalk of Free Speech Alley, a 1,000-foot space in front of Louisiana State University's Student Union, a future Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan began spewing hate and wouldn't stop. After about the fifth N-word and Jew, a sociology classmate of David Duke's got up to confront him. Collis Temple, the first black man to integrate LSU's men's basketball team, began thoughtfully debating Duke, who eventually was shouted down. One man went on to become a prominent American racist, white nationalist politician, Holocaust denier, spewer of more hate. The other, Temple, used the game for greater good, education, unity, showing his children the miracle that happens when people of different colors work together. I tell you what, man, Collis Temple was such a great guy. He's Garrett's father. If people forget this one, too, in the story, and I talked to him about this, I thought we broke news. His father played with Britney Spears' father on the first all-integrated team in Louisiana State history. They were Remember the Titans before Remember the Titans in many ways. His father ended up being a running back, linebacker, and Britney Spears' father was the quarterback, and they won some state title and was the first integrated state title ever. So, I don't know, he just oozes like the way society should be. Garrett Temple does, doesn't he, Bruce?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we've all learned so much over the past few weeks since the killing of George Floyd. A lot of it is the unconscious bias that was always sort of lurking in many of us. And we've had, as you said so eloquently, this has been a wake-up call for a lot of us, and we better not hit snooze because I think we're all going to be better off for this. Our society is going to be better off, and certainly Garrett Temple, there's no bitterness in his voice. There's no anger in his voice. And of course, you know, it could easily be there, but he's all about healing and education and reconciliation. And, you know, we need leadership like that at all levels in our society. Maybe once his NBA career is over, he might have something to offer us in the political arena.
No, I think he's going to get his own Pure Hoops Media podcast and make much more money. So don't even think about that, Bruce. All right. Stop it already. We have got this guy on speed dial.
we were thinking about a co-host for you. I don't know if maybe, you know, the Garrett and Mike show, because I think he would have to get top billing, wouldn't he?
It would be better than Whitlock. Whitlock's just going to yell at me and tell me I'm his alleged friend for 2 hours. He still hasn't called me. I sent him the podcast link. I think he's really upset about that interview.
Well, you know, it's funny because I saw somebody tweet something out who was a follower of yours who listened to that show, and by the man's picture, I mean, you never know who's tweeting, but he put a picture of himself up there, appeared to be a middle-aged African-American gentleman.
His name was Chris Dennis. I know exactly who you're talking about, and he is a middle-aged African-American gentleman.
Right, and he commented on your Twitter about how, you know, he feels like he learned an awful lot about Jason in that interview and had some of his own previous misconceptions, however you want to say it, countered by some of Jason's own words. So, you know, you pushed back on Jason on some of the things that he was saying because you clearly disagree with a number of his positions. At the same time, I think Jason did himself a favor by the way that conversation went with you. I think he's enhanced in the eyes of some people who maybe had a negative feeling of him prior to that.
I think you're right. And he might have just not liked the tenor. And, you know, the funny thing is I forget sometimes, like, I could be a goofball. And while I obviously love to get into these weighty issues and situations, there's sometimes when I try to break the ice with a spot of humor. And when part of the spot of humor is I'll say something that's so outlandish, I expect the other person who knows me to kind of go, "You nut job," like you do when I say something crazy. And not everybody gets that sense of humor, and it's not their fault. It's mine for not being more sensitive to who they are. That's the bottom line, is I don't always do that. I once had John Heyman on. I don't know if did I ever tell you this story? You know John Heyman, the baseball writer?
Yeah, Newsday, I think.
Yeah, Newsday. I don't know where. I think he works for MLB now. But he came on my radio show in D.C. once, and he just kept talking about all the, you know, what whether Bryce Harper's going to re-sign Steven Strasburg. And he'd always had a good reputation, like where he got along with all these agents, right? And he got a, and at some point, I didn't know what, you know, it was like a boring day midway through it. And he just went on this long spiel. And then when I went to cut him off, I said, "Hey, John, all right, that's John Heyman, a mouthpiece for Scott Boras." And he goes, "What did you say?" And I go, I'm joking because people always say, yeah, that, oh my God, it went south from there really quick. And, you know, I look back on it and I go, you know, I tried to tell him we were friends. And he said, "We're not friends." And then at some point I got angry and said, "You know what, John, we're not friends." And I hung up on him. It was not my best moment on a radio show. I have to admit, I was juvenile. But I also expect people to laugh at themselves sometimes. And when you can't laugh at yourself, who are you, Bruce? Who are you really, right?
I have no problem laughing at myself since so many others do it. I figured, well, you know, if you can't beat them, join them.
Oh, my goodness.
Particularly my wife, who likes to remind me that I'm really not very funny.
Yeah, you know what, though? She's like my – if you hear the same jokes over and over, and I go to the same bits of humor and everything, at some point it does get old, and they go elsewhere for funnies.
Actually, I think my younger son, Adam, thinks I'm funny because he laughs at stuff that I say a lot of times, you know, kind of goofy dad jokes.
Yeah.
But now I'm starting to wonder, as he's a little bit older, I mean, he's 27 going on, you know, 40. I think he might have just been humoring me, trying to be nice to me so that I wouldn't, you know, so for whatever reason, I don't know. Because he laughs at everything I say, and I know everything I say isn't funny. So, Adam, you're a really, really great son. But I know you don't really think I'm that funny.
If Mitch is listening too, you're a great sports agent, Mitch. And what you did to get me this show, I'll never know. But I'm going to thank you to the bottom of my heart forever. Dang it.
And he appreciates you, you know, upping his commission from the percentage too. He's very grateful for that. He bought a package of gum, I think, with that. So,
hey, really quick before we go. Do you believe that now that we've got all these things in place, that the NBA is going to play?
Yes, they're playing. In fact, I believe either Shams or Woj put out a specific schedule on their Twitter. So there are actual dates. There's a lot of logistical things that have to be done. But yes, I believe they're playing. I think, you know, there are some plans on how they have to space out the games, because they're going to be sanitizing the arenas in between games. I think, I don't know if all of that stuff has been determined, but yes, they're playing. They're going to play.
Yeah, no, here's what we do know, that the essentially 85 days after suspending the season because of the coronavirus pandemic, Thursday, the Board of Governors, the Thursday before last, overwhelmingly approved the proposal for 22 teams to return to play. Not everybody's making the playoffs. And that starts July 31st at the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex at Walt Disney World Resort in Orlando, Florida. I don't know if Pure Hoops Media is going to have us go down there and pay, but if they do, I will go. And also, Bruce, they have this return to play plan at season. Teams like the Brooklyn Nets, which Garrett Temple's a part of, they have to reassemble in their hometowns first before they take off. They'll continue to hold individual workouts in their facilities. Training camp will start June 30th and last a week. And all teams are supposed to fly to Orlando on July 7th, 3 weeks before the restart of the season. They'll quarantine for some period. Florida law requires people flying in from some states, including New York, to quarantine for 14 days. And then you're going to have a couple of exhibition games, which might end up as scrimmages. And then, boom, I think they got to be tested and everything else. And it's the whole thing is I'm impressed if they pull it off. I really am. I still don't unless you're a week away from it. I'm still going to say that I don't think this is going to happen. And it's not because I'm a negative nabob of negativism. I just think that there's a lot to happen before all of it goes down. And I hope it does, but I'm not going to say yay until a week before.
I can't believe you just channeled Spiro Agnew on the Mike Wise Show, the nattering nabobs of negativism.
The nattering nabobs of negativism. That's what he used to call the media back in the day that just killed his the Nixon, right? Because he was the VP.
You know what's going to be, to me, you know, let's assume, which I know is a bit of a stretch, but let's assume that the plan is going to move forward and the teams are going to be playing. I think the, you know, it's going to be so interesting to see with no home court advantage or road disadvantage, how that's going to affect some of these series. In other words, let's say, you know, in a 1-8 matchup, right? Let's say Milwaukee's going to play, I don't know who's even in the 8th spot in the East right now. Normally that would be a 4-game sweep, right? Pretty much, right. Maybe 5 if, but probably a 4-game sweep. I'm willing to bet that on these neutral courts, these series are going to be a lot closer. I'm not saying that an 8 is going to take Milwaukee to 7 games, but I don't think it would be at all out of the question to see some of these first round series that are normally sweeps go 6 games.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised either. I think when you have a season like this that was delayed and then restarted, I think it brings back memories of 1999 during the lockout year when, you know, lo and behold, the 8th seeded New York Knicks ended up in the NBA finals with, you know, Tim Duncan and David Robinson and the San Antonio Spurs, who won their first title. No one saw, I think everybody picked Utah, and I don't know who was coming out of the East that year. It wasn't the
probably Miami, right? Because didn't the Knicks beat Miami in the first round or in the second round?
Yeah, you know what? Miami was numbered the top seed. So yeah, either the Heat or another team, and the fact that the Knicks, you know, shocked the Heat and da 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 in the first round, and then went on to sweep the Hawks and beat the Pacers. And oh, it's the Pacers. Everybody thought the Pacers were going because they had lost to the Bulls a couple years before that. They seemed like on the cusp of doing it, and all of a sudden the Knicks take them out in 6 games during one of the great runs, playoff runs that I can remember in NBA history, in which I was a part of. Because Jeff Van Gundy was on the sideline, and so were all his lemmings, like me and Isola. So I see that. And it's a crapshoot. Anybody can win. Other than me and you and some people that really love the NBA, I don't feel like anybody's talking about this outside of our little world.
They're going to be, though. Once that ball gets tossed up in the air, people are going to be like, oh, finally, sure. we don't have to watch, you know, the cable news channels at night. Although I got to tell you what show I'm binge watching right now that is just so good.
I could tell you exactly what it is. Don't tell me. Fauda.
Well, I've seen Fauda. I mean, I'm all caught up on Fauda. The morning show on Apple TV with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, really?
Billy Crudup. Yeah. We kind of started it a few nights ago. It is so good, particularly for those of us who have worked in the television business. Some of the characters that are depicted in that show are just spot on, some of the sleaze bags, some of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. In fact, Brian Stelter of CNN is a creative consultant on that show. So, you know, he clearly has a grasp on kind of the rogue underside, to quote the great Bob Lee, of what the TV business is.
So why couldn't I do something like that?
You could have been. You have similar hairlines, and I think, you know, I mean, you're just as good looking as he is.
Hey, I'm not losing my hair anymore. I'm growing forehead.
I got a haircut on Wednesday, my first haircut since like early March. It was so good. I had my Celtics mask on when I went into the shop. It was beautiful. I mean, I feel so nice and tight.
It's great, right? It's great, right? Your C's profiting off the pandemic. What a beautiful franchise.
I know. I got 3 Celtics masks. Here's another one. I should put a picture up on Twitter because it's like it's shopping in style. I sent you a picture the other day of me at the Big Y supermarket with my Celtics mask on. And yes, your first thought was like, yep, NBA profiting off the pandemic. And my response was, it's capitalism, baby.
Capitalism, baby. Just go. All right. Thank you for being part of us again, everyone.
All right, let's go. Time to stick the landing.
of course, thank you to my guest, Garrett Temple, who is just Mr. Socially Conscious, and he was long before everything that's happened in our society the last month or so. I'd also like to thank Bruce Bernstein, who joined me on this podcast for half of it, my all-knowing producer. Ben Wolfen, you put this together and you make this podcast sing. Thank you, sir. And shoot, if you're not catching any of our other shows, Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with Monica McNutt, shoot, Fanta and Adams. When's Fanta and Adams run, Bruce? Tuesday?
Full Court Press with Fanta and Adams is on Tuesday. Can I back up a half a second to Buckets, sure. Boards, and Blocks? Monica had on Renee Montgomery of the Atlanta Dream this week, okay? Yeah. That show is available for people. It dropped on Thursday of this past week. Renee Montgomery, she is one cool person. I would definitely recommend people listening. She's got a big event planned for Juneteenth. She has a foundation. She's down in Atlanta. So she has some big plans for Juneteenth, which is a few days after this show drops. So go back and check that out. And I don't want to mention any names, Mike, because you never know. But we have some pretty cool guests that we've got in the on deck circle coming up soon.
We've been trying to get somebody for probably since this podcast has been on a year and a half, both of whom Bruce and I know. And I'm not going to tease it because who knows if it's ever going to come off. All I'll say is this. Basketball is the greatest game in the history of civilization.
Let's put it this way. If the taping comes through and we're able to say that show is coming up next week, we will tweet something out to let you all know. But I don't believe in jinxing myself. So until it's in the can, it's not in the can.
It's terrible.
But we totally trust this man, this great man with a great social conscience, to be with us next week, we hope. Stay tuned on that one.
Yeah. Here's a hint. He's a deadhead. All right, guys. Thank you for being with us.
You're killing me, Mike. What if it falls through?
I know. Okay. You know what? I got faith. Gotta have
faith. So do I. He's the best.
Everybody, cool. Be careful. Be nice to each other. And if anything happens when you think you need to take off your face mask or you just think that social distancing isn't that important, stay with the program. Be consistent until this thing goes away. Love you all. Talk to you next week.
Peace.
The Mike Wise Show used to be called The Wise Ass Show, but it remains a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.